You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout, your host. I'm here in the studio this month with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, Suzanne Bjornsson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Our guests this month are two people who are specialists in mental health issues. And our show today is about grief, and particularly about caregiver grief, because I think it's a real issue that a lot of people are dealing with before and after people pass. And so I thought this would be an interesting opportunity to talk with some professionals in our community about a difficult topic. So in the studio today, we have Ailey Rhea. She's with an organization called GOBI. She's going to tell you about that in just a minute. And Adam Marquis is with Willapa Behavioral Health. So we have thanks both to you, of you for being here today.
You're welcome.
So they're both going to talk about, they're both professionals in the mental health field. And one of the things that inspired this show is that two of us here in the room, at least, Doug Schaefer and I, have a lot of experience as caregivers for family members. For my father, and Doug, you for your mother-in-law, right?
Right.
And so we've talked over the years about what a complex process it is to be a caregiver. And then when the person passes, there's a whole nother layer of complication there, which is grieving. And grieving as a caregiver, which involves some trauma, can be different from a lot of things. And so I'm just finding, going through this process myself right now, that it's a way more complicated process than I really didn't know what to expect, but I'm finding that I needed some help with it. And so I thought maybe if you're out there in a similar situation, you might need some help too. So that's sort of what the show's about today. So Adam Marquis, let's start with you. Just tell us a little bit about what you do and where you work.
So I'm Adam Marquis. I'm the CEO of Willapa Behavioral Health. I've worked there for about 2 years, right across the Columbia River in Pacific County. We cover Grays Harbor County as well. So we focus on mental health, substance use disorder, problem gambling, domestic violence, wraparound intensive services for children. We work with aging adults, and we do mobile crisis team.
Okay. And let me just introduce Ailey as well. Ailey, tell us about you a little bit.
So my name is Ailey. I work for Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, which is what GOBI stands for. My technical title is Older Adult Behavioral Health Specialist. It's a really cool role that allows me a lot of freedom in that I get to meet people's needs and where they're at. From the grieving process to behavioral challenges to complicated cases, I do a lot of things within like nursing homes, assisted livings in families' homes. So I'm kind of all over the place, which I really enjoy. We do a lot of community education, and the company I work for is very cool, and I get to partner with a lot of people, and I'm thankful to be here.
Wow, thank you so much. Well, let's sort of dive into this topic. Adam, how about if we start with you? So grief, it's a huge topic. Where should people start with it, handling grief?
I think probably the easiest accessible resource would be getting Kubler-Ross's book on the stages of grief and realizing that it's a normal process, that grief is in everybody's life, that the sense of loss that people feel is normal. Even in the animal kingdom, like with elephants, they still have a grieving process when one of their own pack or one of their own dies. It's something that is normal, it's natural, and it's not something to be stigmatized about.
Well, one of the things that I found was that that I am in the process of learning is that grief is way more about, much more than being sad. So Ailey, could you talk a little bit about that? I mean, grief is pretty complex, and so what's mixed up in there? What's it about?
Well, grief is different for everybody, and I feel like one of the things that nobody talks about is how it shows up in your body. Grief in your body is huge. I mean, and it's ongoing. Like, it can be subconscious almost. Like annualized events or something, it'll come back and it'll show up in your body, and you'll be like, "Wow, my stomach's really tight," or "My neck is tight," or wherever it is that you hold that. And I feel like that's an area people don't talk about. And it also could show up in your own physical health, being that you'll have exasperation of symptoms that you didn't have before. A lot of people don't link the mind-body connection. I think that's really important and imperative to your grieving process. Also, like Adam said, it's incredibly normal to go through a grieving process. I think a lot of people avoid it. And I feel like the best thing to do for a person is just to be there for them in whatever capacity they need. Oftentimes people will come around right after and really be there with a meal or whatnot. And I feel like people miss the, I mean, it's such a long process. You need somebody along you the entire way, and to be able to reach out and have that person is huge.
Adam, so one of the things that you talked about before the show, when we were talking about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of grief, one of them was anger. So can we talk a little bit about some of those emotions that are maybe more messy and less appealing that come along with grief?
Well, in terms of social acceptability, anger is probably the least accepted. But anger is usually a secondary emotion to one of the other four primary negative emotions, or ones that are normal or natural, which are, in Pia Mellody's work, if you look at that, there's actually eight feelings. There's three that are positive. There's passion, joy, and love. And the other five are pain, fear, anger, guilt, and shame. All of these areas have neural pathway connections with the body. So each is associated. And if you associate something, it's usually with shame. Usually a lot of shame is going on. So shame begets more shame. And it's like a shame sandwich in between all our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're constantly revisiting and redoing, which shame starts out in the stomach. If you wrote in just an example, it starts in the gut. It travels up to the neck, which to some people get red there, or red in the face, and it comes to the point where you see somebody's head droop, hanging your head in shame. There's a real physiological connection with it, and it does get stored. So with anger, particularly, is right before bargaining. Usually it just happened, I'm angry at this sense of loss, this grief. I don't know what to do with it. Is it my fault? What is the problem here? It's getting a sense of identity crisis of what's going on, and a relational crisis of, well, if that person's not here anymore, who am I? What am I? It's a relational issue. One of the biggest areas of that loss is intimacy, because we really don't have that. And I don't mean sexual, I mean just relational intimacy with people. And when somebody is gone, that's gone as well. So how do I re-relate to myself and others? And for those that are alone or have very limited natural supports or just a network of supports, that's really difficult. But there is hope. There are options out there for to get connected, especially with the big push in the healthcare trends on wellness and connectivity with community and all of that. There are opportunities, and and if you're in this area, it's rich with nonprofits. It's rich with people that really care about the social fabric of life for people and supporting them.
Well, you know, one of the things, when you mentioned the word shame, the S word, I've read a lot of Brené Brown stuff, and she's the person who says, "Hi, I'm a shame researcher," and everybody goes, "Gotta go. I have root canal now. I gotta run." But so it's not something that people really want to talk about.
No.
But what I found, I mean, just to talk a little bit about my experience with this. My dad died in April, and I found that I couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was first, it was grieving and sad and, oh, he's gone. And then it was almost, and then it was, I would lay down to go to sleep and I would be tired. And the minute I would get into bed, I would be wide awake, catastrophizing, just thinking up stuff that would come into my head that wasn't even real.
Mm-hmm.
And I would keep myself awake all night. So I finally went to a therapist who said, "You have PTSD. She told me that I actually had PTSD from all the emergencies and the flashing lights and the scary things that I had to deal with as a caregiver. I was doing something way more than grieving. Or maybe I am grieving. Maybe that's part of it.
Well,
so
grief is traumatic.
So, Ailey, can you talk about that? I mean, so I guess I want people to feel a little bit reassured that if you are doing more than crying, that's maybe part of the grieving. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Grief is traumatic, and I feel like that's an area that needs to be exposed and talked about. I mean, it is, especially with caregivers. I mean, a lot of people in the caregiving industry, they're just kind of expected to buck up, and this is the normal part of life, and nobody really talks about the trauma of grief and how to process that. And I think Gabor Mate does an amazing job of talking about how shame, and so does Brené Brown. Those are two wonderful resources. And then I also brought some other resources that I thought might be helpful to share that you can really search and go through on your own, just so something people can have to do in their own home that they don't have to go somewhere for, although there's a lot of resources to go as well. So the Family Caregiver Alliance National Center on Caregiving is a huge database of resource for grief, and also caregiver exhaustion, because that's something that especially comes towards the end there.
Right.
And then I was listening to somebody the other day talk about a grief and loss, like, and death doula. I thought that was a really interesting concept. That was the first I'd been introduced to that. I mean, I've heard of doulas in other aspects, but I did a little bit of research on it, and it's kind of something that people are really starting to get and engage in. And I know it's an added cost, but for those of us that can do that, I've heard it's very supportive and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the Center for Loss. And
is that a national organization?
Yeah, it is a national organization. Okay. And then the Hospice Foundation has some pretty good resources on that as well.
Well, I found the hospice folks here locally in Clatsop County were just fabulous. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came into the house and, you know, they just, because I was, I mean, I'm not a medical professional. I was taking care of my father with help from a couple of caregivers, but none of us are medical people. And I always sort of worried that maybe we were accidentally killing him or something because we weren't nurses. And the hospice people were able to come in and say to me, you're doing a good job. It's okay. And we'll take it. We'll take some of it off you. And they were incredibly reassuring, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, I can't say enough about the hospice people and how wonderful they were and how much it made it easier to handle something that basically was overwhelming and not handleable. So, So Adam, let's go back to you. What are some resources that you know of? Are there any resources that you'd want to refer people to that if they wanted to browse online or something? Or
I think the resources mentioned, but if they were to just search under grief and loss and find something that's really applicable to them, that's probably a good place to start. I mean, it doesn't have to be too complicated. You know, it finds you right where you are when you go online and you Google something and see and start, I guess, start down the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And what will speak to you will be based on your personality and what's best for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, before the show, Adam, we were talking, you were talking a little bit about you know, life trauma and how it all plays into sort of about the grief sort of involves everything that's ever happened to you in your life, I guess. You know, I don't know if you could talk a little bit about, because what I find in my grieving process is that it's sort of shining a big spotlight on all the problems I ever had with the person who died. Who's someone I loved very much, but of course, you know, I mean, the only real grief that we can say that's really easy is maybe easier is when pets die, because it's sort of uncomplicated. But with people, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do people do with those emotions that are not very pretty about the person that they loved and lost?
It's a interesting dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where to approach that one? You say it again.
I guess maybe what I'm sort of asking is for you to give us sort of permission to forgive ourselves for all the baggage that we sat on while we were taking care of the person that now bubbles up, because there's that incredible responsibility is gone, which sort of, I mean, I remember sort of being, having tunnel vision when I was taking care of my father, that nothing else really mattered except taking care of him, and all the other stuff just got shoved aside. And now that he's gone, I'm sort of finding that there are other things percolating up that are part of my grief, sort of.
Okay, so I think that there's, yeah, let's step through this.
Okay.
The first thing is we can't give what we don't have. And if we don't have, for me, Adam care, or Joan care, or Doug care, or anyone care, if we lose ourselves in other support, we'll lose ourselves to the point where we lose balance and we lose our health or our well-being. It's really that concerning. So that has to be really key. All of our trauma, and everyone has trauma, anything less, the definition of abuse is anything less than nurturing. So
Boy.
We all meet that definition.
That's really something, isn't it?
and there can be little T traumas and big T traumas, but 1,000 cuts of little T traumas has as much of an impact as one big T, for example. And we all experience that all throughout our life.
Right.
Question is, like with Pia Melody, with facing codependence, is how do we have shielded vulnerability? Are we interdependent with people? Do we realize we're valuable and that we can be vulnerable? And do we have, you know, a really good sense of who we are and what we're allowing in and out? So that's a balance is the key to life. We have to do that. And then communication is the exchange of, you know, it's the process of exchange is what we're all about. But if I don't take care of myself, I'm really not going to be great for anybody else. That doesn't mean be selfish. But I know for me, there can be a lot of caretaking, which can be a kind of a yellow behavior of watch out, because am I really trying to enable or am I really trying to be helpful? And someone needs to ask for it if they're able. There needs to be this respect, and people want dignity, you know, the mm-hmm. sense of dignity for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm concerned about post-traumatic stress, then I ought to take the post-traumatic stress index, the PSTI, or maybe the depression scale, like the PHQ-9. Something like that. GAD-7 is anxiety related.
So are those things that people can go online and find? Are they sort of like quizzes, like take a quiz and find out how much of a mess you are? Sort of.
But you can find them online.
I'm speaking for myself.
If we were to take your arm and you were to take your, like if you go to the doctor's office and you take your pulse, it's mm-hmm. no different. Mm-hmm. It's kind of figuring out, wow, for example, my blood pressure, how am I doing with all this?
Right.
How much sleep am I getting?
Right.
These are all indicators. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do one of those assessments if someone doesn't want to do that.
Sure.
But just noticing, I guess in two words, the real bottom line for everything is our prefrontal cortex has to come back online. When we get into fear or trauma, it's offline. The blood vessels shrink. There's not blood going there. We have to have that the cingulate cortex go back and say, activate. How does that come back? Two words. For anybody, for ourselves, is awareness of what's going on and compassion.
Hmm.
Compassion onlines us back to that reality of that moment and helps people come back online. So if I'm compassionate to Doug, I'm going to get that back likely. Because
mm-hmm.
of mirroring neurons, mirroring stuff, and my serotonin comes back up and I'm better. You know, so for me, that's the kind of thing is watch out for compassion fatigue, but take care of yourself, but come back with compassion and be aware of what's going on. And having balance with that, that's really important to me.
Hmm. Well, so Ailey, let me bounce this off you. One of the interesting things that I've been doing with my therapist is something called EMDR. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that? And so, you know, she said to me, well, we can kind of teach your brain how to think differently about this. Mm-hmm. And it's really an interesting, very practical, very hands-on technique where you sort of... So what is that, EMDR? Can you talk a little bit about what that is?
I don't know a ton about it. I know it has to do with just reprogramming your brain to be able to have new patterns and ways of thinking. I really like EFT, too.
Yes, tapping. Oh, yeah. Yes, I want to talk. Tapping
yeah.
is great.
Tapping I know a little bit more about.
Yeah.
I'm just more familiar with that.
Yeah.
Somewhat similar principles, but... It just has to do with being able to look at things in a different light and being aware, more aware of yourself and grounded in your own skin. It's more of like a mindfulness practice, really, at the EFT.
Yeah. But, you know, when I'm go ahead.
And
sorry.
A release of energy.
Yes, a release of energy. What I've found with tapping and with the EMDR, that it's almost like sometimes people need to realize that they can't just talk themselves out of whatever's mm-hmm. happening to them.
Yeah.
You know, that there's sort of like a physical component that you have to sort yeah. of calm your, you just have to sort of talk your body off the ledge, kind of.
Mm-hmm. So the mind-body connection.
Yeah, yeah.
So to come alongside what she's mentioning too, EMDR is eye movement desensitization mm-hmm. and reprocessing. And it's simple as where you see okay. like a hand or some sort of thing. You can even get an app that's free on your on your phone.
Yeah.
But better to do it with a professional,
yeah,
probably.
Right.
But it's walking through all the bits of information in our brain. And by doing and watching that movement, it takes the left hemisphere. That's why you look in left and right. And letting information cross over your corpus mm-hmm. callosum so it connects. And what you see is, as you know, some image comes up or thought, that person is able to, over time with the therapist or whomever, that image starts to get clearer and clearer, and they get lighter and freed up more. That's huge. It's really huge
yeah.
for veterans,
mm-hmm.
for PTSD
yeah,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, too, is so that's kind of come from the head down to the body. The way from the body up from the body to the head is somatic experiencing, mm-hmm. which talks about where areas are, you know, where you're feeling those. When you think of a thought, what are you feeling? What's the sensation? Where is it coming from? Excuse me. And that's cutting-edge neurofeedback stuff, too, with, like, using cranial electrical stimulation mm-hmm. and stuff to be able to do that. This is, like, cutting-edge stuff
mm-hmm.
to do
mm-hmm.
In the last few years. And it's really kind of coming full circle. with trauma recovery. And EMDR on the World Health Organization is the number one recommended technique to use. And it doesn't mean you have to have been a war veteran or something. It can be for anybody to help them to, you know, reprocess trauma.
Yeah, well I found that, you know, my reactions were to sometimes like I sort of have a freeze reaction. And other times I would just feel like, you know, the monkey mind thing where I couldn't concentrate. But the big effect that it was having on me was that I could not sleep. And you don't have to do very many days of not being able to sleep before you start to really become somebody that you're not. And so that I guess what I want to say to our listeners is that if you're in this position, either if you're in a caregiving role or really any kind of a role where you've experienced trauma, that if you start to feel like you can't handle it, there are some really great practical things that you can do if you go and get help. So, you know, I've found that even just a couple of sessions with this therapist has just helped shift me so that I feel like I'm kind of getting a handle on it and I don't feel like I'm just going, holy mackerel, what is happening to me? Because that was kind of where I was sort of getting to. And I mean, the things that we have talked about on the show with Doug and Suzanne about how many millions of people in the United States are caregiving right now, and they're mostly unpaid family members, but also people who are paid caregivers who are handling things that are just, I mean, when you have a person who is physically bigger than you are, who is just doing things that you can't really control that are really frightening and you don't really know what to do about it, that's a trauma. Yeah. And that is something that people, caregivers, experience every day. And I know that I experienced quite a bit. And so all of a sudden, when the person dies, that's all gone, but you're sort of left with yourself. And so I guess for the people in our listening audience who have dealt with that, whether it's with an older person or a child or whatever it is, I mean, I just want you to know that you're not alone. I mean, I guess my feeling in wanting to do this show is that you're not alone. What you're feeling is probably not that weird. And even if it is weird, it's what you're feeling. And it's what you need to take to deal with it for your own happiness. So I guess we are sort of getting to the last part of the show. And I want to give the two of you as our guests the opportunity to talk about what people might do if they want more information about what you talked about. So, Adam, can you give contact info or what people might
have? Sure. The best way to reach us, we just redid our website and try to make sure it's more broader reaching, is www.willapabh.org, willapabh.org.
Okay. And, Ailey, how about you?
Our web address is www.gobhi.org. And I kind of wanted to give a little bit of a resource,
too. Absolutely.
It's an absolutely free resource, and it's been hugely helpful for many of the people I've worked with. It's called the Oregon Senior Peer Outreach. It's a completely free referral line, and it's and they really do a good job of matching people up with their peer. And it's a weekly phone call that you get for people over 55 and over or disabled, like who are experiencing loneliness, which is a lot of people. So I wanted to give that 1-800 number, if that's okay.
Sure, absolutely.
It's actually 833-736-4676. And again, it's Oregon Senior Peer Outreach. It's a completely free program. Wow. It does help with processing grief, loss, depression, and whatnot.
Yeah, which a lot of us are feeling. So, Doug and Suzanne, you guys have really gotten off the hook in this show, haven't you? You haven't had to say anything.
Done very well.
So, can you guys give your contact information? Suzanne, how about you? Because you so these two folks represent Oregon and Washington, both sides of the river. Their organizations are tremendous places to go if you just don't know really what your question is about something relating to, in this case, senior health or mental health. You can just call up and ask, and they'll refer you. So, Suzanne?
With Northwest Senior and Disability Services, our phone number is 503-861-4200. And if you want some more information on this and like the outreach, peer outreach line, you can contact our office. We've got flyers and things like that. So if you're listening to this as you're driving and want to just call us, we can guide you to that direction. And then we also have a suicide awareness event coming up in the community, and that's going to be located at the Warrenton Community Center on September 25th
from 1 to 3, and it's open to the public.
Yeah, that's Gobi's kind of head charging that one.
Well, and Nirmala Dar is coming to speak, and she's the Oregon Health Authority, and she's part of the Older Adult Initiative, and she's an amazing speaker, and there are CEUs, and it's open to anybody. It's on depression, suicide awareness, and it will talk about screening tools
and
whatnot.
That's great. And Doug, Olympic Area Agency on Aging in Washington.
The Olympic Area Agency on Aging, and we have two offices, one in South County in Long Beach, one in North County in Raymond. Our South County office in Long Beach is 360-642-3634. And in Raymond in North County, it's 360-942-2177. And our website is www.o3a.org, and that's the number 3.
And I just want to say, I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm the host of the show. And I just want to say that if you're struggling out there, if you're having problems, just be a little kind to yourself and say that whatever it is that's happening to you, you go talk to somebody. I guarantee they're not going to say, how on earth could you be feeling that? They're going to say, yeah, sure, you're feeling that, because that's what happened to you, mm-hmm. and it's real. So anyway, just a shout out to all of my fellow caregivers and all of our listeners. We love you, and take care out there. You've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I've been here in the studio, as I am every month, with Suzanne Bjornsson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And my guests this month, our guests, have been Adam Marquis from Willapa Behavioral Health. Thanks, Adam, for being here.
Thank you.
And Ailey Rhea. From Gobi. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.